$200,000 to $300,000, you can buy a two-bedroom condo by the beach in Florida or take a trip to outer space. That's how much billionaire Jeff Bezos's rocket company plans to charge per ticket to tourists who want to venture beyond Earth. Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic has already sold about 650 tickets at $250,000 for its own planned voyages, though its timeline is unclear.
A seismic shift for TV's Emmy Awards. For the first time ever, Netflix scoring the most nominations, edging out HBO, which had held the top spot for 17 straight years. Popular Netflix shows The Crown and Stranger Things among the best drama contenders, taking on last year's winner, The Handmaid's Tale from Hulu. But they'll all face fierce competition from HBO's Game of Thrones. Ineligible for last year's awards, it roared back with 22 nominations, topping all shows.
The President of the United States is abroad, but he has American farmers on his mind, worried about those feeling blindsided by the blowback from his trade war with China. China has retaliated against U.S. tariffs by slapping a 25% penalty on American soybeans. That's choking off demand in the world's biggest soybean importer and driving prices to a decade low. But data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture show that low price is making the U.S. export irresistible to others.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It is July 13th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Here we are with another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. Thank you for choosing us this morning on the program today. Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Our regular Friday conversation with Paul. We'll bring him in momentarily to talk about the economy and our portfolios. A little bit later in the program, how about laughter and its impact on you at work and on business? A little bit later in the program, we'll talk about a new study that talks about people with senses of humor, with a sense of humor, and how well they may do in life and in business. That'll be at 5:40 this morning. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are flat this morning, heading to the opening bell on Wall Street. Dow futures only up about 3 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are trying to find direction as well. Around the rest of the globe this morning, in Europe, markets are generally higher by about 0.25% to about 1/3. The FTSE is up more than 1/3 this morning. In Asia, markets are generally higher as well. The Nikkei is going to end the day up about 2%. Of 409 points, but the Shanghai is off about 0.25, and the Hang Seng is up just 44 points. And oil is trading at $70.05 a barrel, which is down about 28 cents. A couple of stories we're watching for you this morning. Stung by a federal judge's decision, a dismissal of its objections to AT&T's mega merger with Time Warner, the Trump administration. The Justice Department is challenging the decision with a legal appeal. The Justice Department says it's appealing the ruling last month by U.S. District Judge Richard Leon, which blessed one of the biggest media deals ever following a landmark antitrust trial. The judge rejected the government's argument that the phone and pay TV giant's $81 billion takeover of the entertainment conglomerate would hurt competition, limit choices, and jack up prices for consumers to stream TV and movies. The ruling allowed Dallas-based AT&T to absorb the owner of CNN, HBO, the Warner Brothers movie studio, Game of Thrones, coveted sports programming, and other must-see shows. And now it is on its way to an appeal. Unclear what kind of success that would have. As you know, the merger has already gone through, so this will be interesting one to watch. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell says the economy is in good shape at the moment, with low unemployment and inflation rising toward the Fed's optimal range. But he says rising trade tensions and higher tariffs could end up being a drag on growth. In an interview for American Public Media's Marketplace radio program, Powell gave an upbeat assessment of the economy in remarks signaling that the central bank's current pace of gradual interest rate increases should continue. The Fed has raised rates twice this year and is projecting two more rate hikes this year. Powell, who was tapped by the president to succeed Janet Yellen as Fed chairman, says he's not concerned about possible political pressure trying to influence the Fed's rate decisions. Let's bring in Paul Nolte this morning. And Paul, from Kingsview Asset Management, perhaps we'll start there. I know you and I have talked about that before, but this trade situation, a little bit concerning for a lot of folks, although there is a bright spot here and there.
It gets interesting each day. So we thought we were out of the woods for a little while until we got to Wednesday, and then Trump said, you know, by the way, we're going to throw another $200 billion onto China, and the markets took it on the chin. And then come Thursday, the markets looked around and said, I think we're going to be fine, and turned around and rallied everything back. And actually, before we came in this morning, the markets were trading up 50 to 100 points on the Dow. So we've come back for a little bit from there. So again, the market's reacting to trade similarly to the way it's reacted to the Trump election, Brexit, some of these other events that we've seen. It's been a very short-term knee-jerk reaction. And then the market sit back and go, well, but we haven't implemented anything yet. We may back off from that. We're still kind of in the negotiation phases here. And oh, by the way, we have earnings coming up, and that should be really pretty good. So in the way Wall Street looks at things, the next shiny new object is, you know, only 5 minutes away. So we'll focus in on that. So that's part of the reason why we're seeing the volatility in the markets really getting moved around here by the trade tariffs. We're starting to see some of the results of the tariffs, though, showing up in the PPI and CPI numbers. This month, I think, was one of the first that we started to see a pickup in some of those pricing.
Yeah, and I saw a report yesterday from our ag friends. Farmers are busy telling the White House as often and as much as they can, hey, we need some direction here.
No, it's true. And just as they were talking about in the opening montage, that soybean prices being down as low as they are, all of a sudden now you're getting some other buyers. China is certainly one of the largest buyers of soybeans from the United States. Now with pricing down, we're getting a lot of offers from other countries. So there are some knock-on effects, some of it good, some of it bad, to what we're seeing in the trade tariffs. But we're still in the very, very early stages. Whenever these other tariffs get implemented and the prices actually start to rise, it will take probably 3 to 6 months before we start seeing it come through in pricing and in a lot of the economic data. So the aluminum and steel pricing that went in February, March, we're just now starting to see show up in some of the data. We'll be interested to hear, as earnings season kicks off really in earnest next week, in the next couple weeks, to hear CEOs talking about what their take is on trade and what their impact may be from a company and earnings revenue perspective.
Yeah, we'll be tuned into those conference calls. Speaking of earnings, today you mentioned the banks get underway. Citi, J.P. Morgan, PNC, Wells Fargo, First Republic Bank. Begin the big bank earnings. We'll probably not hear anything about tariffs from those folks.
We'll be talking about the Fed and the interest rate curve and business here in the United States. We're seeing some pickup in loan activity, but it's still fairly low. But I think you're going to hear more about how they're making their earnings. Are they making it from the trading desk? Are they making it from loans? Are their deposits up? And what we've seen historically from a lot of the banks is a lot of their earnings have been from trading activity, not necessarily what you would consider banking activity.
I thought it was interesting after we talked to you last Friday and even today with the Fed chairman back in the news, the Fed talking about not paying attention to the inverted yield curve, that was going to be a data point that they removed. I wonder why they would remove that now.
It's interesting, and I've talked to a lot of different people about, you know, what's going on with the yield curve, and certainly the Fed's pushing up the short end of the yield curve, and the long end of the yield curve has been, from 10 years on out, tends to move with inflation and inflation expectations. The numbers we got were a little bit higher than expected, but not dramatically so. But a couple people have mentioned the fact that there's not a lot of long bond issuance. There's not a lot of 30-year bonds that are out in the marketplace. And where that comes into play is a lot of pensions and insurance companies use that for their policies, life insurance policies, et cetera, where they have very long duration type of things that they're trying to offset. So there's a steady demand for that, which keeps those interest rates down. So if there was a lot more issuance of 30-year bonds, for example, we might see a more normal yield curve. So their comment was maybe along the comment lines of Powell in the fact that, well, we have some unique circumstances that are creating this flatter than normal yield curve, so let's not necessarily give it the weight that we usually would looking at a potential for a recession.
Yeah, maybe it's a mirage of some sort.
That's one way to put it, yes.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, stocks closed solidly higher on Thursday, with a rally in internet and tech shares launching the NASDAQ composite to a new record. The Dow Jones rose 224 points to 24,924. The S&P 500 picked up 24 points. The NASDAQ advanced 107. There's a new challenge to the merger of AT&T and Time Warner. The Justice Department is appealing a judge's ruling that allowed the $80 billion deal to go through, but it now goes to a D.C. appeals court. The whole process could take months. The airlines are paying more for jet fuel this year. Delta, for example, expects to pay $2 billion more this year than in 2017 to gas up its planes. At least for now, airline officials say strong demand and higher fares are covering those costs. And consumers are paying more for home loans. Freddie Mac says the average rate on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is up slightly to 4.53%. That's half a point higher than a year ago. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're on with Paul Nolte this morning of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Our regular Friday conversation with Paul. Paul, there was right there in the ABC News report about Delta Airlines, and they had their earnings report yesterday, and full-year outlook is a little concerning, oil prices, that, for not just Delta, but for all the airlines.
Oh, absolutely. And it's one of the things that we're looking at, too, in the fact that where we're at in the economic cycle, we're later in the economic cycle, and we would expect to start to see inflationary pressures and commodity prices in general picking up as the economy gains steam from what we've been seeing. We've been seeing about 2% growth. We might see more along the lines of 2.5% to 3% growth. Coming off of the tax cut and some of those other things that we've been talking about, whether that holds remains to be seen. But higher commodity prices, I think, are in the cards at least, and certainly the tariffs don't hurt that at all. So we could be seeing higher prices in the months and even maybe even the years ahead as we get through some of this tariff talk as well as just higher energy prices in general.
Were you surprised this week? The job openings, the labor turnover survey came out, and there are fewer job openings. Is that how I read it? Or are there more job openings?
There's more job openings than there are people to fill.
Right, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
We've been talking about that employment situation for a long time. As you know, everybody's finding it very difficult to find employees to hire. And I've heard from a variety of commentators, they have a very short answer to that. Pay them more,
right? Yeah.
And that's been kind of the issue that we've seen, and we've talked about it in the past, and that the companies are reluctant to increase wages. They're okay paying out a bonus, paying, you know, one time whatever, because they're not then committed to it for the rest of your employment. If I raise your salary by 10%, I can't in 3 years say, well, we're going to cut it by 5% because business isn't so good. So they generally get around that by saying, well, we'll pay you a $5,000 bonus for, you know, you've been here 5 years, whatever it is, we'll pay you a $5,000 bonus. But then they're not on the hook to do that anymore. And that, I think, has some impact on what we're seeing in wages in general. And the complexion of the job market is different. We don't have the big high manufacturing type of jobs. The service economy is a much bigger part of the U.S. economy, and the service wages tend to be a lot lower than the manufacturing wages.
One of the interesting parts of the survey is the number of people who are quitting their jobs, mm-hmm. who feel confident enough to quit their jobs and go find a better paying job. Significantly higher in this report.
No, absolutely, and again, that's the type of job market that we're in, where with the unemployment rate being below 4%, it gives the people a lot of confidence to say, yeah, okay, I keep hearing all this news about great jobs, and there's depending on who you're talking to, and I was talking to a client the other day who left one job, went to another one for 30% more money.
Wow.
So those types of things exist out there, and people are like, yeah, I'm good. I don't really need it. So when the job market is as tight as it is, you expect to hear those types of stories, and it could persist for a while yet.
One of the things when I hear that, I'm like, oh, well, that maybe I'll go look for another job, 30%. But you have to really be careful if that's your mindset to say, hey, I'm going to leave a job. You better have something lined up first, right?
You really should. I mean, you know, the advisor in me is always looking at it from a very conservative perspective. You want to have that in hand first before you say, yeah, I'm taking my walking papers and taking off. But I want to have something lined up. I don't want to promise in the 3 months something will be there. Don't worry about it. We'll call you. But again, when we go back to the complexion of the job market and the amount of jobs that are going begging right now, we're hearing it from a lot of different sectors in the economy, from truckers to airlines, transportation, services, some of the manufacturing companies. So it's not in just one or two sectors. It's in a lot of parts of the economy.
What do you like here as we go into the weekend?
You know, it's interesting with the market going as well as it has over the last 2-3 weeks, and certainly technology leading the way. Technology continues to be a reasonably large part of the portfolio. It's roughly a third of the S&P 500, which is up at the very high levels it used to be back in 2000 at the tech bubble. So for a portfolio that's less than that, you're going to be underperforming. So we still have technology as a reasonably good weight in the portfolio. We're seeing good growth there, good earnings. That hasn't really changed. We still do like commodities, and for the longer term, and granted over the last couple months, it hasn't been a very good place to be as international. Emerging market valuations are very cheap relative to the United States. Their economies actually are less indebted than the United States is. And they're not as commodity-driven as they used to be. A lot of the emerging markets are actually very technology-based. So it's a good place to be. Short-term, maybe not so much, only because of the very strong dollar that we've seen over the last 2-3 months. But I think over the next 3 to 5 years, that continues to be a good place. So as emerging markets have come down here the last 2 months or so, it's not a bad time to throw a little bit of money in that direction, because I think you'll be happy with that, again, over the next couple of years.
Paul, it's always great chatting with you. Where can people find you if they need you?
They can drop me an email at pnolte@kingsviewam.com.
So pnolte@kingsviewam.com.
That's the place.
And you're available for birthdays and bar mitzvahs as well, right?
I really don't do a very good song and dance.
We'll see you again next Friday, Paul.
Absolutely.
Have a good weekend. Paul Nolte again from King's U.S. Asset Management in Chicago.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's NO Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoNO.com. Management consulting giant Accenture has acquired Cogentix, a Schaumburg-based big data and artificial intelligence startup, as a way to help it grow its data engineering business, Applied Intelligence. Terms of the deal were not disclosed. WeWork's two new offices in River North are slated to open in November. One of the locations at 515 North State Street will have 2,000 desks across 5 floors, and another at 330 North Wabash Ave will have 1,100 desks across 2. Once they are open, WeWork will have 8 operating co-working offices in Chicago. And Cars.com has officially begun the sales process. The move comes after Cars.com hired J.P. Morgan last month to explore its options regarding a possible sale of the company. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoNO.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. A new study shows the more fun we have at work, the more productive we are, and the less likely we are to suffer burnout. Laughter helping the business bottom line. Lori Dothwaite is a lecturer in psychological interventions at the University of Central Lancashire and is with us this morning on the line from London. Lori, I want to ask you about this survey. What are we talking about here? Regular laughter, sarcasm, dark humor?
Well, there's a lot of research now that shows that having a good sense of humor is linked to not only IQ, but also emotional and social intelligence. There's also a lot of evidence that shows that it can relieve stress. So engaging in humorous conversations, having a laugh with your friends, can reduce stress and help us to overcome difficulties. It also helps us to bond with colleagues, peers, family members, and keeps us healthier.
And what kind of humor are we talking about? Just sort of the general humor or dark humor or sarcastic humor?
Well, there's definitely been some research that shows that, in particular, having a good sense of humour, a positive humour, if you like, can improve your well-being. Things like sarcasm, self-defeating humour and things like that aren't necessarily associated with a reduction in stress, can actually make you a bit more stressed and more aggressive, apparently. There's been some research looking at dark humour and that link with that to intelligence. It shows sort of cognitive flexibility and increased IQ for people who engage in that kind of humor.
I'm interested. Is humor something that we are born with, or is it something we can develop?
Well, evolutionary psychologists have found that it is definitely an inherited trait. So, for example, if your parents had a good sense of humour, then there's every chance that you could inherit that. And, again, part of that could be nature and nurture, you know. So it can be, you know, inherited through the genes, but also learnt in your family setup. You know, if you join together and laugh regularly, it's something that you've grown up with. Obviously, you're kind of developing that sort of part of the brain and a part of that, your personality.
So let's talk about how this plays out in our everyday lives. People who are funny, do they do better in business? Are they better at relationships? Are they more productive citizens?
According to research, yeah, it does seem to be that way, that actually funny people tend to be more successful. And that has to do with a number of things in terms of confidence, so increased confidence. If you're funny, if you can make people laugh, then you have greater perceived confidence, increased self-esteem. People tend to like you more. You tend to be more social. Also, there's research that shows that you're more attractive. Particularly, women look for men with a good sense of humor. So it tends to show that somebody has better genes, they have better sort of high intellect, more resilient, for example. So women are more attractive to funny men. And there's some research that shows that men like funny women, but it seems to be more that women prefer funny men, particularly men that can produce humour. Quick-witted and things like that.
What is the chemical process that's going on here between laughter and intelligence?
So there's a number of changes that happen in the brain when we engage in humor and it makes us laugh. So one of the things is that we have sort of increased dopamine in the brain. So this is the kind of feel-good hormone. This not only makes you feel happier, but it also opens up the learning centers of the brain. So it helps you to be more flexible, more creative in your thinking. Also helps you to be better at problem solving. There's also evidence that shows that you have reduced cortisol in the brain. So this is a stress hormone. So when we produce cortisol in periods of stress, this actually inhibits our ability to enjoy humor, inhibits our problem-solving abilities, and inhibits our creativity. So there's studies that have shown that actually engaging in fun and laughter can improve our memories. So there was a research project not long ago with senior citizens showing they were showed a group of senior citizens a 20-minute funny video, and then they measured their cortisol levels afterwards, and their cortisol levels reduced. They also scored higher on memory tests than the other group of senior citizens who had not been shown the video. So there are some interesting findings here in terms of perhaps research around dementia and Alzheimer's as well.
That's very positive. I know a couple of times you've mentioned in this interview already that you have better problem-solving skills. I'm guessing this means that, or could mean that, using humor in education is also positive.
Absolutely, yes. So definitely they've found that humor in the classroom can really enhance children and adult learners' ability to master and comprehend new topics. Also to sustain attention as well when teaching. Again, like we said before, that chemical differences that happen in the brain when we engage in humour, we open up the learning centres, so people are able to retain more information, improve their memory, and improve mastery as well of new topics. So definitely something to be using in the classroom, and also just makes students want to learn more. It's a positive experience, helps to reduce the stress and anxiety that students might face as well.
People are listening right now probably thinking, okay, this sounds really good. How can I become more funny? How can I develop a sense of humor if I don't have one? Is that possible?
Yeah, it is possible. So, you know, we mentioned before that perhaps there is, you know, a heritable trait there, but we also know it's something we can develop. It's a muscle that can be exercised. The more we do engage in it, the more we can improve our ability to laugh and see the funny side of life. So there's lots of different things that we can do, like go along to laughter yoga classes. There are a number of those kind of set up now, and I'm sure you have them where you are as well. So that's a kind of a class that's combining laughter technique with yoga practice to improve relaxation, to help reduce stress. The body doesn't actually know the difference between real and fake laughter. So, you know, we can actually induce fits of laughter and still get the same biochemical benefits. So that's one thing. Also, you know, watching funny films, spending time with fun friends. Engaging in childlike play, you know, as we get older and got bogged down with work, we tend to be so serious and we don't you know, do the fun things that we used to enjoy, play the games that we used to play when we were younger. But actually there's huge benefits to engaging in play, doing fun things, you know, going camping with family and friends, or playing games, playing different sports, and generally just being silly and acting your shoe size for once. You know, Albert Einstein very much attributed his brilliant mind to his childlike sense of humour, as did Stephen Hawking as well. So there's definitely something in it.
You mentioned the research into dementia and Alzheimer's disease. I'm wondering if there's any research that, let's say you are a humorous person, have always been a humorous person, and have found yourself to become becoming less so. Could that possibly indicate a neurological issue happening there early on?
Possibly. I mean, there definitely seems to be, when people, you know, start to exhibit symptoms of Alzheimer's, there are changes that happen in personality, and it's really unfortunate, particularly, you know, sad for the person themselves, but also for family members to see that change occurring. Again, I think it's something that probably needs a bit more research done, but we do know that actually, you know, laughter therapy and having fun and engaging dementia patients in play therapy can really improve how they feel, help them to better manage the stress, and can reduce some of the kind of symptoms that they experience. So it's definitely an area that needs much more research, I think.
Along those lines, you've talked about a couple of areas that you'd like to see some more answers. If you were going to run one of these studies, what immediate questions would you like answered that haven't been answered yet?
That's a really good question. Gosh, there's so much that I still really, really want to know. I would like to see, you know, humor, fun and play taken more seriously, you know, in business and in education. It's still tended to be seen as something silly and frivolous, you know, something for the weekends. But actually, you know, I think we need to try and incorporate this into our places of work a lot more, definitely into our education systems, because it can really boost creativity. It can really help productivity as well in the workplace. So I would like to see much more research done around that area of it, but also in terms of the health side of it. So, you know, there are pioneers of play, looking at working with patients with cancer and dementia as well. And these are really important areas to look at. You know, they've found that when patients with cancer engage in regular sort of laughter and humour and fun, it tends to not only relieve their symptoms of pain, but also improves their outcomes and survival rates as well. So again, we need to kind of really develop this area of research further.
Laurie, we appreciate you being with us this morning, and we're all going to go out and try and laugh a little bit more today.
Fantastic.
Laurie Dothwaite is a lecturer in psychological interventions at the University of Central Lancashire in the UK with us from London this morning.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are flat this morning heading to The Opening Bell a little bit later on. Gold and silver are also trading lower this morning. Let's get the latest on commodity and agriculture now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Well, good morning to you, Steve. And, of course, we're continuing to watch the activity in the world trade area. Yesterday, the Department of Agriculture came out with its report on stocks and sales and everything else. U.S. Department raised its soybean supplies forecast to the highest levels ever by the end of the 2018-19 marketing year. USDA also cut its U.S. soybean export forecast and raised its U.S. corn harvest outlook. But markets didn't react all that much, really, because at the end of the day, corn was up 5.5 cents. Soybeans, the nearby July contract, down 3.75. But the rest of the months traded higher, and soybeans bounced after hitting the new lows. So it continues to be interesting. But now, Steve, the most interesting thing to me is U.S. soybeans are trading at prices below Brazilian soybeans. And so that means that they're coming after our soybeans. And apparently other countries that haven't been able to afford U.S. soybeans now coming in to buy them. So it's a fascinating time, and crop conditions continue to be absolutely superb. Tasseling, of course, is underway. That's when the ear of corn is formed on the plant. And USDA left its corn yield per acre unchanged yesterday, but still raised a little bit corn production.
Orion, back to the soybeans issue. I mean, when you have those other countries coming in, and clearly they're getting a bargain price, I guess it's better to sell some soybeans than no soybeans, right?
Well, definitely better. And again, we may find new markets for soybeans because we have so concentrated on China, which is the biggest soybean buyer in the world and the biggest buyer of U.S. soybeans. And so, yes, we may find some new markets for our U.S. soybeans with prices where they are at the moment. So I guess that's one of the positives of all of the talk that we're seeing. And so far, a lot of it has been talk, but now we wait to see if it'll turn into action from the standpoint of China buying rapeseed and buying canola and the other oilseed producing ingredients for what they need for their livestock feed and also for human consumption, because they need cooking oil, and soybean oil really fits that in China. So going to be interesting to watch. Something else that'll be interesting to watch, and I got to mention this because the tractor show season underway. Max Armstrong in Penfield, Illinois, today through Sunday for the annual Historic Farm Days in Penfield. And if you want to see and have a love of old tractors and old farm equipment, head down to Penfield. Besides seeing all of that, you'll see Max Armstrong. He will be there.
Sounds like a deal. Orion, have a great weekend.
Thank you, and the same to you.
All right, and make sure you listen to the morning show tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, July 13th. Three big financial firms, at least three of them, reporting quarterly earnings today. Citi, J.P. Morgan, PNC, Wells Fargo, First Republic, all out with earnings. On the rest of the calendar, we'll get consumer sentiment numbers today, import-export prices as well, and Fed Speaker Rafael Bostic is out there talking about monetary policy and the economy today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, July the 13th.